My theory about job satisfaction was eroding quickly, especially as I met more and more people with supposedly great jobs who, like me, dreaded going to work. These were engineers and executives and teachers, highly educated people who carefully chose their careers based on their true passions and interests. And yet, they were undoubtedly miserable. The theory crumbled completely when I came across other people with less obviously attractive jobs who seemed to find fulfillment in their work, gardeners and waitresses and hotel housekeepers. And so it became apparent to me that there must be more to job fulfillment than I had thought. I wanted to figure out what it was so I could help put an end to the senseless tragedy of job misery, both for myself and for others. And calling it a tragedy is not hyperbole. Scores of people suffer, really suffer, every day as they trudge off from their families and friends to jobs that only make them more cynical, unhappy, and frustrated than they were when they left. Over time, this dull pain can erode the self-confidence and passion of even the strongest people, which in turn affects their spouses and children and friends in subtle but profound ways. Of course, in some cases, the impact of job misery is not subtle at all. It leads to serious depression, drug and alcohol abuse, and even violence at work and at home. Beyond the human misery caused by this phenomenon, the impact on organizations is undeniably huge. Though it may be difficult to quantify, the dissatisfaction of employees has a direct impact on productivity, turnover, and morale, all of which eventually hit a company's bottom line hard. What makes all this so absurd is that there is indeed an effective remedy out there, one that is barely being used. It has no direct cost and can provide almost immediate benefits for employees, managers, and customers, thus giving companies who use it a powerful and unique competitive advantage. But let me be very clear about something. The remedy I propose here is going to seem ridiculously simple and obvious at first glance. I am aware of that, and I must admit a little apprehensive about it. But when I consider how many managers fail to put these ideas into practice and how many people continue to suffer through miserable jobs as a result, I come to the conclusion that perhaps simplicity and obviousness are exactly what is needed right now. In fact, I am convinced of it. As the 18th century author Samuel Johnson once wrote, "People need to be reminded more often than they need to be instructed." I sincerely hope that this little book is a simple and powerful reminder, one that helps you make someone's job, maybe your own, more fulfilling and rewarding. The Three Signs of a Miserable Job. The Fable. Part 1. The Manager. Shock. Brian Bailey never saw it coming. After 17 years of serving as CEO of JMJ Fitness Machines, he could not have guessed that it could all be over without warning in just 19 days. 19 days. But over it was. And though he was better off financially than he had been at any time in his life, he suddenly felt as aimless as he had when he dropped out of college. What he didn't know was that it was going to get a lot worse before it got better. Brian. Early in his career, Brian Bailey came to an inescapable conclusion. He loved being a manager. Every aspect of it fascinated him. Whether he was doing strategic planning and budgeting or counseling and performance appraisals, Brian felt like he had been created to manage. And as he experienced more and more success as a relatively young leader, he quickly came to the realization that his decision to forego college made him no less qualified than his peers who had been to business school. But then again, he hadn't had much choice about leaving school. Brian's family, being lower middle class to begin with, fell on particularly hard times when the Bailey walnut orchards in Northern California were hit 2 years in a row by crippling frosts. Being the oldest of five kids and the only one out of the house, Brian felt a sense of responsibility not to drain the family resources. Even with the financial aid programs offered at St. Mary's College, keeping him in school would have been a serious burden for the Baileys. And Brian's academic focus on theology and psychology didn't make the economic justification for staying in school any easier. So, answering an ad in the newspaper, Brian took a line manager position in a Del